Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
MCH addresses phone line issues. ORMC receives booster reallocation from MCH by Royal McGregor. During Tuesday's Zoom meeting, Medical Center health system officials spoke at length about phone issues the hospital is experiencing. MCH CEO and President Russell Tippin said there's a major external issue that is happening with the phone system as people attempt to schedule their COVID-19 booster, second dose, appointments. Tippin is asking the public to be patient when calling. What's happening right now, there are so many people trying to call in that it's overloading everything, Tippin said. The problem is everyone thinks that they have to be first on Monday to get that. MCH is scheduled to begin giving out the COVID-19 booster of the Pfizer vaccine on Monday for those who received the first shot at Radcliffe Stadium. Odessaans can call 432-640-2747. That number is answered Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., which are also the same times to get the second shot at the urgent cares location at either 6030 West University Boulevard or 3001 JPS Parkway. MCH Chief Nursing Officer Christine Abbott-Timmons said during the Zoom meeting that 800 people had already scheduled their COVID-19 booster as of lunchtime on Tuesday. She also explained the urgent cares are scheduled to give out 800 to 900 COVID-19 booster shots per day. We don't want people to come to their appointment any sooner than their appointment time, Abbott-Timmons said. I will say 5 minutes early is a good time. Don't come 15 minutes early because you will have to sit and wait in your car. We want people to pull into the parking lot at your scheduled time, check in, go straight back to a room, get your vaccine, wait the allotted amount of time, and exit the building. It will be very organized and timed approach. On Tuesday afternoon, Odessa Regional Medical Center sent out a press release that detailed it won't receive any COVID-19 Moderna booster vaccines this week. However, ORMC Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohit Saravanan said MCH has allocated around 80 to 88 second doses of the COVID-19 Moderna booster to ORMC. Saravanan said there will be about 50 people who were supposed to receive the second dose of the vaccine that will have to be rescheduled. Saravanan also detailed during the meeting that the CDC had come out with new guidelines that the 3-week gap for Pfizer and the 4-week gap for Moderna can extend to 42 days between the first and second doses for both vaccines. The most recent data is showing that even if you are delayed up to 42 days, 6 weeks, after that first shot, it is still effective, Saravanan said. CDC guidelines say to try to stick to the 21 days for Pfizer and the 28 days for Moderna as much as we can. But if you are delayed, that's okay still, up to the 42nd day. Saravanan said it is worrisome that ORMC didn't receive a second dose shipment that is requested, This is the first time that ORMC didn't receive an allotment of COVID-19 vaccines. We are pushing very hard to make sure that we make it into next week's allocations so we can make up for those that were missed this week, he said. MCH is scheduled to continue its mass vaccination efforts at 9 a.m. today at Ratliff Stadium. Due to forecast inclement weather, MCH will only hold one mass vaccination drive through this week, as Thursday and Friday have been canceled. Abbott Timmons said the mass vaccination effort is scheduled for 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Wednesday, Thursday, and Sunday next week. Tuesday's total COVID-19 numbers for MCH was in-house patients was 49, with 22 of those as critical care patients. There are 7 in CCU overflow, with 18 patients on ventilators. MCHS has had 13,541 negatives, with 32 pending. ORMC's total COVID-19 numbers were 21 in-house patients, 15 of them in the ICU, and 5 on ventilators. ORMC also has 6 staff members out on either self-isolation or quarantine. 376 days. For 376 days, the city has fought a lawsuit brought by the Odessa American to enforce the state law that guarantees the public's right to see basic police records. Through January 6th, the city has spent $112,138.47 of taxpayers' dollars to fight releasing information on crime in Odessa. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County numbers are not updated daily. ECISD daily cases, 12 students, 3 staff. U.S. cases, 26,339,515 total confirmed, and 463,659 deaths. Find out more at dhsh.state.tx.us or the city site at tinyurl.com/tztrjlf. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/y6ntptuq. COVID-19 vaccines. Medical Center Hospital will be administering the first dose of Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine at the drive-through clinic at Ratliff Stadium, South Main Entrance. The clinic will start at 9 a.m. and gates close at 2 p.m. today only. The Thursday and Friday clinics have been canceled due to weather. The clinic will resume next week, February 17th, 18th, and 21st. The clinic is for Phase 1A frontline workers and Phase 1B most at risk and for ages 65 and older. Online registration requested for pickup, quicker on-site processing. For those that are not able to register online, will be rerouted to a waiting area to register before vaccination. Wear short sleeve clothing, easy to access arm. Bring a valid driver's license or other photo ID. To pre-register or for more information, visit mchodessa.com. For those looking for a way to help, email volunteer@odessa-tx.gov. MCH will be administering booster second doses shots of the Pfizer vaccine starting February 15th. Those who receive the first shot at Ratliff Stadium can call Set Your Appointment at 432-640-2747. Phone line will only be answered during clinic hours. The booster shots will be given at two urgent care locations at 3001 JBS Parkway and at 6030 West University Boulevard. Hours have been extended to accommodate the community from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Friday and from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday and Sunday. The community should set an appointment within their 5-day range listed on their vaccination card. No booster shots will be given to patients before the first date listed on their card. If patients can't make the 5-date range on the card, they can still make an appointment after those dates. MCHS is also asking the community to only show up for their appointment at a few minutes before their allotted time to avoid a crowd in the waiting room and to ensure the most efficient process possible. There will be no walk-ins for the booster shot. Odessa Regional Medical Center, 52 East 6th Street, will not receive the Moderna second dose vaccines that are due this week. An extra order of second doses to cover those who have been missed, but are unsure of when those will arrive. The CDC continues to recommend that people get their second dose of COVID-19 vaccines as close to the recommended interval as possible. 3 weeks for Pfizer, BioNTech, and 4 weeks for Moderna. CDC's updated guidance was revised to allow for second dose administration up to 6 weeks, 42 days, after the first if it is not feasible to adhere to the recommended interval. CDC is not advocating for people to delay getting their second dose, but the data from clinical trials support this range. For more information, please visit www.odessaregionalmedicalcenter.org/vaccine. Please check on vaccine availability. For more information, call 432-582-8549 or visit tinyurl.com/Y3JQHZ89. Walgreens has limited COVID-19 vaccines available in select areas. For eligibility requirements or more information, visit tinyurl.com/YHR6NEUD. HEB pharmacies are prepared to receive new allotments of COVID-19 vaccine at any time from the state of Texas. Once they have vaccine, eligible customers can sign up using the scheduler to receive a COVID-19 vaccine. To sign up, updates, or information, visit vaccine.heb.com. CVS stores are administering the COVID-19 vaccine by appointment only in select stores based on local eligibility guidelines. For updates or information, visit tinyurl.com/Y508QJE4. Walmart and Sam's Club pharmacies are administering the COVID-19 vaccine based on state and federal eligibility guidelines in select areas. For updates, visit tinyurl.com/Y5K95KZE. in. Dumping cleanup gets manpower. Roll off dumpsters on the way to West Odessa by Bob Campbell. On a 3-2 vote, Ector County Commissioners on Tuesday approved transferring two men from the Highways and Streets Department to Environmental Enforcement to help clean up the trash left by illegal dumpers. After Precinct 1 Commissioner Mike Gardner's motion to make the change, he and Precinct 4 Commissioner Armando Rodriguez supported it, while County Judge Debbie Hayes broke the tie. Precinct 2 and 3 Commissioners Greg Simmons and Don Stringer opposed the move. They said because the men should have stayed under the supervision of Public Works Director Evans Keasley, although they have been loaned to Environmental Enforcement since the first of the year with the court's approval. Keasley had said he would still need the men in his department when they were not cleaning trash. But Environmental Enforcement Director Ricky George countered that they had been working full-time for him and would continue to be heavily occupied there. George noted that the effort will gain momentum when a $266,938 grapple truck is delivered in April. In related action, the court voted unanimously to buy 5 roll-off dumpsters for a maximum of $30,000 to be placed around the west side of the county to make it more convenient for citizens to dispose of their trash. Gardner said it hadn't been decided where the dumpsters would be placed and that George would help choose the locations. Gardner represents West Odessa. New district judges Justin Lowe and John Schroed and new county attorney Greg Barber sought raises for Lowe's administrator and bailiff, Schroed's administrator, and Barber's investigator, but their requests were denied on a 4-1 and 3-2 votes because the opponents said no raises had been given to employees in other departments and granting them would be unfair. Gardner voted in favor of the pay increases. He explained after the first two votes because raises should not be given across the board, but he based on merit, and that the legal office officials had been budgeting enough money to cover them. Rodriguez said he voted with Gardner regarding Schroed's administrator and Barber's investigator because he had found Gardner's reasoning persuasive. Simmons, Stringer, and Hayes voted no on all 4 requests, while Rodriguez nixed the first 2. In Hayes' biweekly review of COVID-19-related concerns, she reported that the health department had been vaccinating the residents of local and area nursing homes and had been working with Walgreens and CVS pharmacies to offer vaccinations there. The court also approved Lowe's request for $4,090 to buy equipment and furniture, voted to apply to the governor's office for victims coordinator and liaisons grants for the county attorneys and district attorney's offices, okayed specifications for seal coat, aggregate, graded base material, water, asphalt patching material, and liquid asphalt emulsion for highways and street improvements. Approved documentation to continue the county's eminent domain authority. Okayed District Clerk Clarissa Webster's recommendation to hire Cofile Technologies of Dallas for the archival digitization of records. accepted a Phase 1 Certificate of Substantial Completion for the Law Enforcement Center's booking and intake area. Approved Sheriff's Information Technology Specialist Stephen White's proposal to amend the county's end user and professional service agreement with Tyler Technologies of Lubbock and add 11 Odyssey online users, including city fire marshals. Man killed in gunfight had survived bus train crash. Former state inmate had fired at deputies after high-speed chase by Bob Campbell. A 40-year-old Odessa man had lived through the horrific January 14, 2015 collision of a state prison bus and a freight train, was shot and killed in a December 10, 2020 shootout with Ector County deputies. Sheriff Mike Griffiths on Tuesday identified the man as Remigio Panetta, who was being sought on a state blue warrant for violating his parole when he died. Scheduled to be on parole till October 2, 2027, for possession of a controlled substance and a gun, Panetta got out of his car and fled on foot following a high-speed chase and then fired 6 shots at the deputies, one of whom was hit in the calf of a leg and was held overnight at Medical Center Hospital, Griffiths said. Asked to identify the deputies Tuesday, the sheriff said, "We're not going to give that out right now because some other things are going on." Griffiths said Panetta's semi-automatic pistol jammed and he was trying to clear it when he was brought down. He was dead on arrival at the hospital. The chase ended in the 1300 block of Wilson Street and Panetta was shot at 7:40 p.m. near Hickory Avenue and Ada Street in South Odessa. Another man who had been riding in the car and also fled on foot was not considered dangerous. 2 Texas Department of Criminal Justice correctional officers and 8 inmates died in the 2015 accident at Pinwell, west of town. And Panetta was one of the 3 survivors interviewed by the Odessa American on June 25th that year in prisons north of Abilene. Using a cane, the then 35-year-old inmate sat behind the thick glass at the Middleton unit and said he particularly regretted the deaths of 2 friends in the wreck. "I broke 6 ribs and hurt my sternum, neck, clavicle, toes, heel, and shoulder, and my finger was almost cut off," Panetta said, showing deep scars on a finger. "I blacked out when we had the impact with the train." Panetta said most of the inmates had slept from the time they got onto the bus at the Middleton unit en route to Rogelio Sanchez State Jail in El Paso. But he was watching the traffic as the bus followed one truck and passed another and the overpass approached. "I have a lot of daydreams and night dreams, mostly daydreams," he said. "Back then you would blame everybody, but you got to forgive. Nothing like that ever happened before." Panetta said his memory had gradually cleared since he was in shock and sedated after the wreck. "I'm just sitting here by the grace of God," he said. "God knows when he is ready to take each one of us in his own time. When I woke up, I could hear myself breathing. I heard the ambulance say, 'Hey, is anybody alive in there?'" The bus was sitting on its side, and whenever they said that, I said, "Yes. It really hurts me, all the families that lost their loved ones. I see everything flash through my mind. It's something from out of this world. When I get out, I want to do a lot of volunteering to help other people and help them not come to these places. I hope nobody ever goes through anything like that again. Local News Roundup, Lunch and Lecture. The Petroleum Museum, 1500 West I-20, Midland, has scheduled lunch and lecture featuring John Scarborough from 11:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Thursday. Scarborough will share the history of the Scarborough family in West Texas and the founding of Midland Meat Company. Admission is free. Drinks and dessert will be provided. For more information, call 683-4403 or visit petroleummuseum.org. Webinar. The Hispanic Heritage Foundation has scheduled Black History Month, Afro-Latinx Charla, from 4 p.m. to 5:15 p.m. Thursday. Kim Haas, Executive Producer, host and creator of the PBS series Afro-Latino Travels with Kim Haas, will be a part of the conversation, sharing her experiences, ideas, and actions. To register for the free webinar, visit hhftpage.link/ERWS. Celebrating Black History Month, the Ellen Noel Art Museum, 4909 East University Boulevard, is celebrating Black History Month by featuring a short video on African American artists, followed by a community discussion in partnership with UTPB from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. each Thursday. Featured artists will be Faith Ringgold, Betty Saar, Kehinde Wiley, and Kara Walker. For more information, call 550-9696 or visit www.noelmuseum.org. Benefit. The Hope Wins Banquet, featuring benefiting Jesus House Women and Children's Center, will feature Michael Jr. and music by Erica Lane at 7 p.m. Friday at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center, 305 East 5th Street. Silent auction will be included. Check out Valentine's Day packages overnight at hotel stay at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center, roses and more. For tickets or information, visit JesusHouseOdessa.com or email Shirley at JesusHouseOdessa.com.
This is Michael reading an additional section inside the Odessa American, published Wednesday, February 10th. Local news roundup. Man charged with soliciting 14-year-old girl on Instagram. A 24-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly told a 14-year-old girl that he was 17, sent a photo of his genitals to her, and offered her $100 to have sex with him. Sean Russell Conley was charged with online solicitation of a minor, sexual conduct, a second-degree felony. The Odessa Police Department was told on January 9th that a 14-year-old girl had been contacted on or around December 27th on Instagram by an unknown person, later identified as Conley, reporting he was 17 years old, an OPD probable case affidavit detailed. Conley reportedly made small talk prior to requesting the 14-year-old meet him and engage in sex despite her age. Conley also offered to pay the girl $100 in exchange for sex, and he suggested that she sneak out and meet him. Through Instagram, Conley also sent a picture of his genitals to a girl he knew was 14 years old, the affidavit detailed. Screen captured images of the conversation reportedly showed the screen name was later identified as Conley's. A search warrant was sent to Instagram, which showed the account holder to be Conley. Conley was arrested and booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center at 10:25 p.m. Friday, jail records show. He has one bond totaling $25,000 and was still in custody as of Tuesday morning. Affidavit states video surveillance shows fatal shooting. An Odessa Police Department probable cause affidavit detailed this 36-year-old man, who was arrested in connection to the fatal shooting of a 38-year-old man, was seen on surveillance footage shooting the man seven times. Clinton Tyrone Saunders was charged with murder, a first-degree felony. Saunders has one bond totaling $200,000, and he was still in custody as of Tuesday morning, jail records show. Officers were dispatched in reference to shots fired around 1:35 a.m. February 4th to the 900 block of Ratliff Ridge Avenue, the affidavit stated. Complainants stated they heard between 5 and 7 shots. Saunders reportedly called 911 at 1:37 a.m., stated that Mario Castillo had attacked him and he shot him. Officers saw Castillo laying dead in the street in the 1000 block of East 90th Street. Officers contacted Saunders in the 1000 block of East 87th Street, and he made a res gestae statement that he had been at a bar with Castillo and they got into a fight and he shot Castillo in self-defense, the affidavit stated. According to the Merriam-Webster website, res gestae refers to the facts that form the environment of a litigated issue and are admissible in evidence. After waiving his right to an attorney, Saunders reportedly told police that Castillo is a co-worker and they had been hanging out at a bar. Saunders stated they began to argue, so they went back to Castillo's residence, located in the 1000 block of East 90th Street, and got into a fight in front of the residence. Saunders stated he attempted to leave in his vehicle, but Castillo approached him again while he was in his vehicle, and being in fear for his life, Saunders shot Castillo, the affidavit stated. During the investigation, officers reportedly viewed surveillance footage from Castillo's residence, and it showed Castillo and Saunders fighting in front of the residence. Saunders entered his vehicle, and Castillo approached him at the driver's door. Saunders shot Castillo twice, and Castillo fell down onto his back on the street. Saunders exited his vehicle, approached Castillo, and shot him 5 more times while Castillo was lying on the ground, the affidavit stated. Saunders got back in his vehicle, left the scene, and called police.
This article is entitled, U.S. Sees Shale Tapping New Oil Wells Again, by Sheila Taubin, Bloomberg. American oil explorers will boost drilling and production later this year, as crude prices are set to stay above $50 a barrel, according to a U.S. government report. Supply from new wells will exceed declining flows from wells already in service, raising overall crude production from the second half of this year, the Energy Information Administration said in its short-term energy outlook. The agency increased its forecast for 2022 U.S. crude output to 11.53 million barrels a day, up from January's estimate of 11.49 million. Production in the shale patch has been ravaged by the pandemic. Domestic crude production is hovering below 11 million barrels a day, down from a peak of 13 million reached last year in January. The oil price plunge in early 2020 that swept crude into negative territory caused companies to slash capital spending and reduce drilling programs. U.S. crude futures have rebounded 20% so far this year. Despite the EIA's expectation for rising production in the second half, the agency sees U.S. output declining in the coming months, hitting 10.9 million barrels a day in June, with the number of active drilling rigs below year-ago levels. The agency estimated 2021 production at 11.02 million barrels a day this year, down from a previous forecast of 11.1 million. The EIA forecast U.S. petroleum demand this year at 19.44 million barrels a day, down from its previous projection of 19.51 million. The EIA said it does not see domestic petroleum consumption reaching pre-pandemic levels this year or next. U.S. explorers typically need to drill new wells regularly just to keep up production because output from shale declines quickly, sometimes in a matter of months. This article is entitled, Chesapeake Emerges from Bankruptcy, vowing new era for shale, by Sergio Chapa, Bloomberg. Chesapeake Energy Corporation, the once iconic energy explorer that helped ignite the American shale gas boom, is emerging from bankruptcy protection, a shadow of its former self. And in a way, that's just fine with its boss. Shale has been marked by growth, and growth for all the wrong reasons, Doug Lawler, the company's chief executive officer, said in an interview. What we see going forward is a new era for shale. The driller exited Chapter 11 protection on Tuesday. Long gone is co-founder and ex-CEO Aubrey McClendon, who died in 2016, 3 years after he was forced out in a Carl Icahn-led boardroom revolt. Also consigned to history is Chesapeake's spot in the pantheon of premier U.S. energy producers like ExxonMobil Corporation and Chevron Corporation. The company lost most of its acquisitive swagger as it grappled with the fallout of ill-timed deals that saddled it with a crushing debt load. These days, Chesapeake is slimmed down, chastened, and looking to make its way in a shale industry that has gone through a painful evolution. Lawler, who's led the company since 2013, and who says bankruptcy could have been avoided if it wasn't for 2020's oil price crash, has overseen a reduction of 90% of its workforce. Just last week, the company made another round of job cuts at its Oklahoma City-based campus and moved to redevelop the expansive site, much of which is now surplus to requirements. Chesapeake is also pledging to produce free cash flow, an increasingly common mantra in shale, which has been heavily criticized by shareholders for prioritizing production growth over investment returns. Their opprobrium is understandable. In the past decade, the sector saw more than $300 billion in losses. Lawler, 54, said shale's cash-burning days are gone. "They're absolutely over," he said. "The investors and market demand it. It demands that we return more cash to shareholders and that we have greater discipline in our business. It also demands improvements in ESG. Clouded outlook. Lawler, a former chief of overseas exploration at Anadarko Petroleum Corporation, dismantled the cult of personality that had prevailed at Chesapeake even after McClendon's departure and instituted an austere, no-nonsense focus on financial returns. Under his tenure, Chesapeake cut its debt by more than half. But the turnaround was too little and too late, given the demands on the company's cash by debtors, just as the pandemic paralyzed economies and energy consumption around the globe. Chesapeake sought bankruptcy protection in June, shouldering more than $9 billion in debt. The filing came just months after the company refinanced billions in debt. During the case, noteholders and other unsecured creditors claimed Chesapeake was undervaluing much of its undeveloped real estate and demanded a higher payout. U.S. bankruptcy judge David Jones sided with the company and approved Chesapeake's reorganization plan over the committee's objection. But Jones did find that Chesapeake was worth about $5 billion, hundreds of millions more than the company's estimate. Expert departures. Still saddled with $1.27 billion of debt, the fracking pioneer is exiting Chapter 11 with energy markets looking a bit better than they did a year earlier. Oil has rallied in 2021 after Saudi Arabia cut production, while in gas, U.S. stockpiles are forecast to end the winter at below normal levels because of frigid weather and robust overseas orders. But Chesapeake is also re-entering the sphere of publicly traded drillers without many of the assets and in-house experts that previously it could call upon. Not only did Chesapeake auction off premier gas fields in an unsuccessful bid to stay afloat, but it dismissed many geologists, engineers, and physicists who were among the world's most experienced shale specialists. "We're going to offer a very competitive free cash flow generation machine that has a disciplined approach to our capital reinvestment rate, that has a very strong, disciplined approach to our cash costs, focused not just on profitability, but also sustainability, Lawler said. Chesapeake plans to use $1.3 billion of fresh financing to focus on gas drilling in Pennsylvania's Marcellus Shale and the Haynesville region of Louisiana. The company is also pledging to eliminate flaring, the intentional burning off of excess gas at remote well sites, by 2025, and to achieve net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2035. What's clear from the development plans is that Chesapeake will become a natural gas growth company anchored by the Marcellus and Haynesville, while the oil assets are harvested for free cash flow, Josh Silverstein, a Wolf Research LLC analyst, wrote in a note to clients. This is the oil page. This article is entitled "Oil Rally Continues for Seventh Straight Day" by Andres Guerra-Luz, Bloomberg. Oil continued its advance for the seventh straight session on expectations of a strong rebound in demand and as the dollar weakened. Futures in New York climbed to above $58 a barrel, the highest since January 2020, after a choppy trading session Tuesday. The nearest Brent contract sharply widened its premium to the following month, pointing to supply tightness with inventory shrinking globally and amid expectations of further supply declines in the U.S. A weaker U.S. dollar is boosting the appeal of commodities priced in the greenback. There are reasons to be cautious of crude's seven-day rally, which is its longest streak of gains in 2 years. In an indication of a stretched market, West Texas Intermediate's 14-day relative strength index is in the most overbought territory since 2017, while the gauge for Brent is at the highest since 2012. West Texas Intermediate for March delivery rose 39 cents to settle at $58.36 a barrel. The markets are becoming very forward-looking, and there's optimism that we're going to see a strong rebound in demand, said Edward Moya, senior market analyst at Owanda Corp. Saudi Arabia's decision to unilaterally cut production in February and March was a game-changer, which has removed oversupply concerns in the short term. Oil's surge since the end of October has been underpinned by COVID-19 vaccine breakthroughs and Saudi Arabia's pledge to deepen production cuts. Slowing virus infections across the globe are raising optimism fuel consumption will continue to climb, while cold weather is pushing demand higher. There are, however, some concerns that higher prices will attract renewed supplies to the market, curbing further rallies. There is, to some extent, a limit on the upside to prices, said Rob Hayworth, senior investment strategist at U.S. Bank Wealth Management. We still have a lot of OPEC supply to come onto the market, and the faster prices go higher, it implies OPEC is going to bring back supply sooner. U.S. crude inventories are expected to have declined last week, according to a Bloomberg survey, following two consecutive weeks of decreases. The industry-funded American Petroleum Institute will report its inventory figures later Tuesday, ahead of U.S. government data on Wednesday. There are still some concerns that the world will find itself short of crude in the not-too-distant future. Total SE sees the risk of a supply crunch in the medium term stemming from the oil industry's continued underinvestment last year, while cracks in the U.S. shale model have also emerged. This article is entitled "Coldest Blast of Winter Shakes Energy Markets" by Brian K. Sullivan, Bloomberg. Winter's iciest blast is advancing across the U.S., dialing up demand for heating fuels and threatening to set cold weather records from the Great Plains to the Gulf of Mexico. Temperatures are expected to tumble 30 to 40 degrees Fahrenheit below normal through the central U.S. as a weakened polar vortex unleashes Arctic chill across the continent. In the Northeast, temperatures will be 10 to 15 degrees lower through the next week. This should be the coldest week of winter for the U.S., said Mike Ventrice, a meteorological scientist with IBM. It looks like this will be a two-week cold wave when we look at peak heating demand. Prices for natural gas and heating oil, fuels used to heat homes, are surging as the cold sets in. Spot gas at the Waha Hub in Texas traded at a two-year high Monday, while at Boston's Algonquin City Gate Hub, prices neared a two-year high. Gas futures for March delivery, meanwhile, are trading at the highest seasonal level in 4 years, suggesting the market anticipates tighter supply throughout the winter. Expectations of stronger demand for heating oil in the frigid Northeast are also extending diesel's rally in New York, with futures settling Monday at the highest level in more than a year. This is impacting all major markets with the exception of the Southeast, said Ventrice. Temperatures have already plunged across the Great Plains and upper Midwest, with readings below 0 degrees Fahrenheit from Montana to Minnesota, according to the National Weather Service. The lowest temperature in the U.S. as of Tuesday afternoon was minus 34, set in both Merrill and Land O'Lakes, Wisconsin, according to the Weather Prediction Center. Literally 3 to 4 dozen record cold maximum records could be set across the central and southern plains and Mississippi Valley on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, said Dan Peterson, a senior branch forecaster specializing in winter outlooks at the Prediction Center. Power grids from Texas to the Northeast will all be taxed by the cold, Ventrice said. Temperatures will fall near freezing in Houston by next week and into the 20s in Dallas before that, said Dave Samohal, a meteorologist with AccuWeather, Inc. This is really focused on the plains, but is spreading out in all directions, Samohal said. It is going to be an impressive, widespread blast of Arctic air.
Hello, this is Michael, reading an additional national article from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, published Wednesday, February 10th. Mary Wilson, longest reigning original supreme, dies at 76. The Associated Press, Las Vegas. Mary Wilson, one of the original members of the Supremes, the 1960s group that helped define the Motown sound and style and propel Diana Ross to superstardom, has died. She was 76. Wilson died Monday night at her home in Nevada, and the cause was not immediately clear, said publicist Jay Schwartz. I just woke up to this news, Ross tweeted on Tuesday, offering her condolences to Wilson's family. I am reminded that each day is a gift, she added, writing, I have so many wonderful memories of our time together. Like many Motown artists, Wilson, Ross, and Florence Ballard had grown up in Detroit and were still in their teens when they were signed in 1961 by Berry Gordy to his Young Record Company. Within 3 years, the Supremes had their first number one hit, Where Did Our Love Go? By the end of the decade, they were Motown's greatest commercial success and embodiment of the label's polished pop soul music and elegant appearance, with their beehive hairdos and heavy eye makeup, in sequin gowns or in slacks and strapless tops. Working mostly with the songwriting producing team of Holland Dozier Holland, the Supremes had 12 number one hits, including such classics as Baby Love, Come See About Me, Stop in the Name of Love, and Back in My Arms Again. Gordy was so invested in them that when Nothing But Heartaches failed to top the charts in the mid-1960s, Gordy wrote a company memo insisting that only number one songs were acceptable for the Supremes. Balance was restored by their next release, I Hear a Symphony. The Supremes gave listeners some of the most joyous sounds of the 60s, but their personal story was bittersweet. As loosely mirrored by the Broadway musical Dreamgirls, Ballard would become resentful of Ross's growing prominence and was replaced in 1967 by Cindy Birdsong after missing performances and recording sessions and struggling with alcoholism. Ballard died in 1976. Around the time Ballard left, Gordy renamed the group Diana Ross and the Supremes, a lineup which held until 1970 when Ross departed for a solo career and was replaced by Gene Tyrell. Once again called the Supremes, they had a top 10 hit in 1970 with Stoned Love, but faded after that and broke up in 1977. Gordy issued a statement Monday night, saying he was extremely shocked and saddened to hear of the passing of a major member of the Motown family, Mary Wilson of the Supremes. According to Variety, Gordy said the Supremes were always known as the sweethearts of Motown. Wilson, Ross, and Ballard were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1988. Ross, Wilson, and Birdsong attempted a reunion tour in 2000, but Wilson and Birdsong dropped out before it started, after reportedly disagreeing with organizers over how much they would be paid and whether they would have creative input. Ross toured instead with Linda Lawrence and Cherie Payne. Following the Supremes' disbandment, Wilson released the solo albums Mary Wilson and Walk the Line, and wrote a handful of books, including the best-selling Dream Girl, My Life as a Supreme, and Supreme Faith, Someday We'll Be Together. Her last book, Supreme Glamour, was written with Mark Bago and released in 2019, when she also competed on ABC's Dancing with the Stars in 2019. A native of Greenville, Mississippi, Wilson had lived in St. Louis and Chicago before settling in Detroit and befriending Ballard when both were in middle school. Their rise to Motown seems inevitable now. Other childhood friends included several future members of the Temptations and Smokey Robinson, who helped them arrange a meeting with Gordy. His conditions for signing them included changing their name from the Primettes. Ballard is credited with suggesting the Supremes. Wilson, in a recent YouTube video posted Saturday, said she was excited to celebrate Black History Month and her upcoming birthday, March 6th, and teased fans with the announcement that Universal Music had plans to release some of her music. Several celebrities mourned Wilson's death on social media, including Viola Davis, Questlove, and Kiss's Paul Stanley, who said he was in touch with Wilson last week. Reasons for coughing after surgery. To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach, published Wednesday, February 10th. Dear Dr. Roach, 6 days ago, my father had bypass surgery. Coughing with phlegm started on the day after the surgery, and it hasn't stopped yet. Right now, it is even worse than it was in the beginning. Is this normal? Usually, my father smokes a lot, and even after surgery, he is smoking about 10 cigarettes a day. Can smoking be the cause of coughing? In several articles, I read that coughing after surgery is normal, but that it lasts only a few days. My father is still coughing 6 days after surgery. This is why I'm worried. Answer. Smoking can indeed be the cause of coughing, but coughing after surgery is sometimes a result of serious complications, such as partial lung collapse or pneumonia. A call or visit with the surgeon's office would be a good idea. They would have a great deal of experience at telling worrisome causes of coughing from the routine post-surgery cough. In-home camera systems don't sit well with Sitter. Dear Abby for Wednesday, February 10th. Dear Abby, I enjoy babysitting for the children of family and friends, but while I have nothing to hide, I hate how everyone seems to have inside cameras. I feel like I'm in a fishbowl, like if I let the kids veg in front of the TV or computer, I'll be judged as lazy. I also hate having my picture taken, so the idea of being on a live feed all day is off-putting. Do I ask them to turn off the cameras or stop babysitting? I can't be the only person who is uncomfortable being monitored all day like a caged animal. What's a good way of handling this? Monitored in Ohio. Dear Monitored, people usually have cameras inside their home for security reasons, and so they will have a warning or evidence in case of a break-in. Parents and pet owners enjoy peace of mind knowing they can periodically check to see how their precious angels are doing. The intent is not to spy on you. If you feel you are being watched excessively, ask the parents how they think you are doing. Unless they have a complaint about your performance, a good way of handling this would be to simply accept the situation or restrict your babysitting to homes that are camera-free. Dear Abby, I have had a crush on a man since we were in our teens. We are now in our mid-40s. Both of us ended long-term relationships about a year ago. We have stayed in contact every now and then, but only as friends, more like family. He was best friends with my beloved late uncle. We have decided to meet, with sex at the forefront of our thoughts. How do I prepare myself to go into this with a sex-only frame of mind? Do you think this could damage our 30-year friendship? Nervous in Oregon. Dear Nervous, it has been my observation that men and women view sexual relationships differently. Women often let their emotions get involved. Men can more easily separate the two. It could absolutely damage your 30-year friendship if what he expects is a casual friends with benefits relationship, and at some point you decide you need more from this man you have had a crush on since your teens. Dear Abby, my 25-year-old daughter has stopped talking to me. She said I need counseling to discuss the abuse during her childhood. I asked, what abuse? She won't say. I can't think of any. She was never spanked. She was given everything she asked for and allowed to join any club or sport she was interested in. The only thing she finally mentioned was that my husband and I had arguments. We didn't argue often. I'm at a loss. Should I step back and leave her alone? I send texts and call her once a week. Most go unanswered. When she does answer, she asks if I have started counseling. Please advise. Cut off in Indiana. Dear Cut Off, tell your daughter that you are openly open to counseling, but only if it is joint counseling with her to figure out why there is such a disparity in your and her memories of her childhood. If you do, it may, I can't guarantee, resolve what's happening now.
This is the horoscope, Royal Stars by Madeline Aslan. Happy birthday for Wednesday, February 10th, 2021. A baby born today has a sun and moon in Aquarius. Assured, individual, and emphatic, you have a claim coming to you in this life. Through your unique and intense vision, you accomplish a masterpiece this year. You touch the emotions of those around you. If single, you're rather take it and leave it. And this year you choose to remain single. If attached, you need a partner who loves you precisely for your eccentricities, faults, and foibles. Leo fits the bill. Aries, March 21st to April 19th. The accent today is on cooperation and networking. Assume a role of greater leadership within an organization if the opportunity arises. Develop your support system. A friend appreciates your kindness. Tonight, your creative gifts will shine through your many phone calls, texts, and emails. Taurus, April 20th to May 20th. The support of friends and a series of coincidences advance your professional status and public image. An inspiring hunch or creative idea changes your career prospects for the better. Tonight, be cautious about making commitments. There might be more involved than is first apparent. Gemini, May 21st to June 20th. Today encourages the exploration of new ideas. Visit a library or bookstore online or enroll in a study program. Be patient if an in-law or grandchild seems a little demanding. Humor and talking over your differences helps. Tonight, news arrives concerning one from your past. Cancer, June 21st to July 22nd. Today is a day of subtleties. Research work or solving a mystery captivates you. You'll cherish peace and privacy. Your workload eases. Release a relationship you've outgrown. You will find it is a time to review your many types of relationships. Tonight, relax. Leo, July 23rd to August 22nd. There can be a change of heart brewing when it comes to a partnership you have in mind. Talk over feelings and expectations with your business partner or love partner to avoid misconceptions. Tonight brings a greater understanding and acceptance of life as it is. Virgo, August 23rd to September 22nd. A wholesome diet and moderation hold the secret to feeling well. Virgo rules the lower digestive tract, stress, and nerves in general. This is where you will experience any problems. Prevent the problems by maintaining youthfulness, agility, and rejuvenation. Tonight, congratulate yourself. Libra, September 23rd to October 22nd. Today brings a higher energy level than usual and indicates overall happiness and appreciation from those you care for. Responsibilities will be easier to cope with. Others will be helpful and supportive. Tonight, breathing a sigh of relief with laughter. Scorpio, October 23rd to November 21st. Your household feels unsettled. Today hints at a move or a shift. Explore new avenues of creative expression. Seek ways to release stress. Take routine precautions regarding your health and fitness. Tonight, talk about the shift with a family member whose opinion you trust. Sagittarius, November 22nd to December 21st. Today is an excellent day to learn new things. Consider the axiom from the Temple of Delphi, know thyself. It is a time to focus on self-understanding. Adapt to abrupt changes in the status quo. Tonight, talking it all over with a neighbor or sibling who is helpful. Capricorn, December 22nd to January 19th. Be receptive to changes in your source of income. Business meetings, future travel for professional reasons, and new publications offer opportunities to increase your income. A demand for a different type of work could arise. Tonight, writing down the pros and cons. Fail-proof. Aquarius, January 20th to February 18th. Diplomatic and ever-popular Aquarius. Our Aquarians are willing to help and befriend nearly everyone. And today you do. Your energy level will skyrocket. This accelerated inner fire continues until tomorrow and brings you love and appreciation. Tonight, offer words of encouragement. Be a good listener. Pisces, February 19th to March 20th. A dream or deep meditation helps you process and release a poignant memory. This brings needed healing for the mind, body, or spirit. Your mood will be introspective while you go through this. It is a very important operation. Tonight, feeling pounds lighter. Born today, playwright Bertolt Brecht, 1898. Soprano Leontine Price, 1927. Director Michael Apted, 1941.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.